Look at these little drunk monks.
That's our new name.
I really wish that's how we opened the show. Just look at these
Leave it
little
in.
drunk.
Leave
You can
it in.
decide when to start, Trevor. You're
That's
the one
true.
who's in
You
charge of
leave
this.
that in, sir.
Hello, and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Owl Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts. With me each week are two amazing people who are...
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I'm best known for the Rimstone Angels saga, the Books of the Usurper, and for the bees in my brain being in retrograde today.
I love that.
It is I, B.Dave Walters, friends to the statistical majority of mankind. I really hope that you got to hear that intro, and now I'm going to mention it so Trevor can't edit this out.
Damn
So you're going to hear our cold
I'm opening
open.
a text doc and I'm leaving myself a note.
Yeah, if this is your first time listening, I just want you to know, you now know what this is. So you can't turn back. Whatever happens now, you're on the hook for a good review.
They're
Because you were
asking.
ample warning.
They're asking on the Discord for a new challenge, which will unlock videos.
Oh, geez.
You know,
And
to my
here, look.
credit, I tried for videos like 2 years
You
ago.
did.
You
No,
can do
you
this
did.
one because I've still got my concentration chick makeup on, so I can't
Sure.
even be vain about it because I look fantastic.
You do. You do. You're always beautiful, but your face is on today. You've still got your face on. Yeah.
We'll see about that. That's a lot more editing for me.
Can I tangent for a moment?
Always.
No,
Who are we?
Okay, one of my favorite humorous nonfiction books is Lindy West's Shit Actually, which is a bunch of movie reviews,
Oh
and
my
it's very
God.
funny. And I have never seen Face Off, but I have listened to Lindy West the audiobook of her review
Peaches.
of
Papa got a
Face
brand new
Off,
bag. Yeah.
which is amazing. And I don't know whether that means I really want to see it or I shouldn't see it. I should just sit with this
No, because
hilarity.
it can only disappoint at this point. So I
Yeah,
think, yeah,
right?
stick with what you're.
It
Although I
sounds
might bite this.
terrible.
It is very late 90s, you
Yeah.
know? I mean, but it is Nick Cage and John Travolta when
Yeah.
they were peak.
Yeah.
Nick
This is.
Cage and John Travolta.
If you're ever like,
Yes.
man, I really need a ridiculous Nick Cage movie in my life, there you go. There you go.
What's in
Like
Wayne
my
is
favorite thing
directed
about
by
that movie is
is
they are
that one in The Rock she talked
and
about? The
it's and
Rock.
it's directed by John Woo, and you know what's in Papa's bag, Peaches, that whole
There's a point where she's like, there are times where I forget about Nicolas Cage, and then I see him, and it's like coming home where your father is cocaine and your mother licks your face when you've been bad or good.
I'm gonna buy this book. This is
It's so
incredible.
funny. It is very good.
Oh.
It is really wonderful. The first chapter is called The Fugitive is the Only Good Movie.
For fucking hell, what a statement.
And then she ranks all movies out of 10 DVD copies of The Fugitive. The
Oh my
Fugitive
God.
gets 13 DVD copies of The Fugitive.
So that's so funny because I guarantee you he has not heard, he's not read this book. Kyle St. James, who we've done some games with, he rates movies based on how many Jason X's they are.
I
The
mean,
10th Jason movie, he's like, I don't know, that's three Jason X's out of seven Jason X's.
Is that movie good? I thought
No,
that was
it's
terrible.
terrible. It's one of
This
the worst films
feels
ever.
like valuing your things on the Zimbabwean dollar. Like, a really good movie is 6 billion Jason X's, okay?
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't really know what the
What's
what the
it's
ratios there are. And
I
quite frankly, I feel like fewer Jason X's is a more positive comparison, honestly.
That's
But
true. That's true. Like, there's a part of me too that's like, bless them and I love them, but this feels like Idle Champions designed the economy of your movie review system. You need scientific notation to express
this is
the quality of the
12E2 Jason X's out of
except for the point that a lot more Jason X's is not a good thing.
It's true. It's true.
It's the paradox. Anyway, start with a book review. Book,
yeah,
book
there we go.
Well, there's one last thing. Where are we? Where are we on the Discord? We were two away earlier.
As of this recording, we're at 98.
Yeah, okay. Well, we got to 98 earlier today.
I said this in the Discord this morning. I genuinely had a dream last night that we hit 100 and I had to buy this fucking book.
All right, you know what? I'm about to put it
I had a
line.
Dream about taking out my Kindle and buying this fucking book.
I'm about to put us across the line right now. Just while Trevor's actually trying
what
to get the show on the road.
Aaron,
if you would, give me a link to the Discord here, Aaron, while Trevor's attempting to steer the
you
ship here.
You already posted in it.
I don't think you did.
I didn't. So I use my powers sparingly. So.
Well, that still means we need one more. So
I'm about to put it over the line.
That's what he's saying. He didn't tweet about it yet.
Yes.
Oh, you bastard.
Why is nothing doing this
it's okay.
right?
It's okay.
It's
I'll send it to him.
Nuts.
I'll send it to him.
Yeah.
I got you.
I can't. Oh, wait. Sorry. I know it's wrong. It's my Bluetooth keyboard. Is
about to say now. This
connected.
Probably should edit out of our purely audio show.
Fine.
But
this is what they listen
that,
for.
Yeah, you know that this is what we are. this is. Yeah.
If there's some version where I need to not mess up things instead of messing up things and being charming about it, I don't think it's possible. That is not what I bring to this party. I bring this can with the little drunk monk on it.
I love it. Okay. Well, while B-Dave plots, you know what? We're gonna stick with Discord for a moment because I've been doing what we've done a couple, or I think one other time now at least, where I asked for some questions. And I'm gonna roll my little die and see which one we're gonna answer. So let's see. We got some lovely people asking questions. Yeah. Oh, hey. This is from Alex Luco. Does second draft mean completely rewrite, or I heavily revised and edited the first draft? Feeling very daunted about this, and I get as I get further along into my first draft.
So that depends a lot on what state of your first draft, and also how are you most comfortable revising. There are probably going to be scenes that you are going to chuck and you're going to rewrite. But even if we sort of go in with the accepting that first drafts are roughing things out and experimenting with the form, and it's okay for them to be shit, some of it's going to be great. Some of it is going to be gold. It's going to be exactly what it's supposed to be, and you're not going to do a lot with it. So you don't need to like throw it all out and start over unless that's the way that you want to approach it. I definitely know authors that do this. When talking about it with them, we refer to it as flipping the table. But you don't have to flip the table, right? You can move things around and keep what, you know, what's working. You can kind of start from the beginning and just like rewrite what needs to be rewritten, polish what doesn't. It's going to be up to how you want to handle it, how up to the feedback you're getting. It doesn't sound like you want to throw it all out and write it again from the top.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
Yeah. I've heard people do either they completely rewrite it or they don't. Yeah, it depends on what you feel you need to do. But also be nice to yourself. Don't read it and just be like, I hate everything that I did. I'm throwing it in the flames. We've talked about Dr. Jekyll. Don't do that.
There's not a pattern. There's no wrong way to do it. I mean, again, as I've shared with you, my drafts change very little because I plan so much. By the time I'm actually putting fingers to the keyboard, it's kind of paint by numbers. So it is extremely rare that I get through and I'm like, oh, you know, the gunfight that is on page 80 actually needs to be on page 20. Like I've done that legwork in advance. So that's when I'm moving pieces, is during the outlining and planning phase. So it's but for me, the draft is a fresh coat of paint.
Okay, let's do one more Discord question, and then we'll get on to the email questions that we've had in the backlog for a bit. And this one is going to be from J. William Shaw. I'd love to hear a conversation around choosing a tense for your story and how the tense and perspective affects the narrative. For example, I'm writing a third person present. Why do you think this is less common in the genre? How does it affect the story when it's told in present tense versus past tense, or first person versus third person? I know you've talked about first and third person already, so no need to retread already trodden ground if you feel like it's already been covered. I will say this first and foremost: I don't know why first person present tense I cannot read. I've tried with so many things, it throws me off. Like someone recommended Red Rising to me recently, and I tried to read it, and I got like 15 pages, and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't. I don't know why my brain cannot handle this. It doesn't work for me. But it does. But Red Rising is a popular book. Like it's definitely working for people. But what do y'all think about how tense and point of view changes the story?
Do you want to do this one first? Doesn't really apply to screenplays.
No, it doesn't. But I mean, I
But
write
you
other
do a lot
stuff.
of stuff.
I
Of
write
course, you
random
do a
stuff.
lot of stuff.
I'm known
Sorry.
to put a pen on a paper.
I did not
You
mean
know,
to
just
imply.
random collect my fair share of keys over the time. Yeah. Okay, let me give you a little bit of context here, dear friend, especially dear friend only listening for the first time. This is I would say this is what we're usually like, but it's not quite what we're usually like because I'm exhausted and Aaron has had a uniquely bad day. But Trevor, ironically enough, looks great. He's all cleaned up. He's got a nice haircut, trimmed
Compared
his
to
beard.
every other episode of the
No,
show, yeah.
again, you're always the hunkiest podcast editor. But I mean, I was like, oh, hello, Congressman. You know, I just, but I wanted it to be known that, you know, he jeezed himself up, and I noticed. I care.
I
But
appreciate
that
you.
being said, I'm wiped out, and I'm not making any sense. And even in the best of times, I often get the explanations of exactly which tense is which wrong. I find I keep the viewpoint pretty steady. What is it? It's when you basically either get into the when you get into the mind of just one person or only in the mind of one viewpoint character.
Yeah, it's
Was
limited.
it? Yeah, that's kind of what I like. Because I find all things being equal, it one can get confusing if you're bumping around into lots of different people's minds. It can. And two, you can draw a stronger association with one character when you know what they think and not what anybody else thinks. But that is purely preferential. I definitely think it affects the kind of story that you can tell. Like, for instance, if you're trying to write a murder mystery, but you are omniscient and you can see in everybody's mind and you've got the killer's mind, then you're kind of on the hook to write really cliche stuff like, I hope they don't look behind the door, or I didn't think this night would work out this way, you know, and not think, you know what I mean? That I shank that dude and I hope they don't find the knife under the floorboard,
I
you know?
kind of want an
Like,
omniscient whodunit now, where it's just
yeah.
like, it's like, and this may have been where the killer got away. Pfft, that's not what I fucking did, thought
Yeah, exactly. Fucking
That's
plebeians.
fascinating. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. Not gonna lie, I am intrigued.
Giving Aaron
Yeah,
ideas.
I will. Yeah, write it down. It's great. I will say I have seen, like, you know, in the Law and Order franchises, it's like they figure out who commits the crime and then, you know, they prosecute the person, right? But Law and Order Criminal Intent, the difference with that one is you see the crime right out of the gates. You know exactly who did it. And the show is about how the cops catch them.
Yeah, Columbo style.
So, yeah, so I could see a story where you're like, oh, yeah,
Who done it? How done
Columbo's
it?
the, yeah, exactly, you know? But you're in everybody's minds where they're like in the kitchen and they're like, and you say he was sitting right here and you're like, yeah. I said right there. That's where it is. You know what I mean? And going from there, yeah.
That would be fun. I will say the one thing that I will note on this is if you are planning on changing perspectives, third person might or first person might not be the thing. I have read books that have done it. Will I say that it was that it worked?
Yeah, because it's always I, me, my, but you got to get across somehow the fact that it's not my eye, it's your eye. Yeah.
That's so wait, so question is it because I've been slightly distracted because B-Dave posted that tweet and four people have joined since then.
I told you I put it across
Oh
the
no! Well,
line.
okay, here's the thing. They've joined, but I
Oh.
don't think they've done the
They haven't done the
Tangerino
rolls thing.
tag,
They haven't
which
done
I
the
have
rolls thing
remind I
yet.
had to go remind them to do.
Oh.
Although, you know, maybe they're just joining because they want to talk about actual plays or books or any of the other things we do
That's true.
on the
It's
Dungeon
true. Good
Scrawlers
notes.
slash writing about dragons and shit Discord.
Good notes. I didn't
But anyway,
specify,
I
but yeah.
got slightly distracted. That's okay. I remind people periodically because I want this to happen, to be perfectly honest, for multiple reasons. I've heard it's very good. I've heard it's like really well written, and I'm intrigued.
This just not possible
I
that a
don't
book about
know. I
giving
don't
hand
know.
jobs to minotaurs is very well
I
written.
don't know, man. Prose is not dependent upon subject matter. And
True.
then two, I want to watch you two squirm because it's amusing. Okay, so the
Yeah.
question though was the question about first person versus third person,
Is
about present versus
how do you
past.
pick a tense and how does that affect the narrative?
Okay. So first of all, I think that you pick a tense by following your gut. What does this story want to be told in? Because fundamentally, fighting against that urge is going to be more of a pain in the ass than trying to guess what's the best, you know, way to do this. So this is first. Like, if your heart is telling you this is first person present, do it in first person present. Now, here's the reality. People have preferences about that. Like Trevor said, first person present is not for Trevor. And that's okay. No book is for everybody.
Exactly.
That's how it works. So keep that in mind. It is my opinion that present tense shrinks the sort of emotional space. It pulls it in really close because things are happening now. And so when you tell a story in past tense, there is a sense like this already ended in some way, and so it is finite. When it is present tense, it could be anything, but that means you can only see this far, you know, like just what's ahead of you. So that is another thing. Do you want to create a sense of it being very, very close, very immediate, very like we don't know what comes next kind of story? It's not that you can't create that tension of what comes next in a past tense, but it is more, I think of it feeling a little claustrophobic. In Empire of Exiles, there's an interstitial story that takes place in the past, and it's told in present tense versus the main story, which is told in past tense. And this seems really counterintuitive, but the past story is about just these two brothers in one room talking to each other. And there is this sort of lingering, like something happened back then, that is affecting the narrative. And when we have it in present tense, there is this sense that, you know, what comes next is a little more undecided, even though it's already happened. So I think that it works better in that case. Whereas, you know, when you have to do like one thing too is that can get in the way is that sense of like, is this plausible? Like, there is this piece, and I think this is why people sometimes get a little trouble with first person present, is like, these things are happening, and also this person is telling me their story. And so sometimes that feels a little weird, not always, but sometimes it feels a little weird. And then what B Dave mentioned about first person and the I, me, my kind of situation, when you tell a story in first person, you do have to kind of make sure that you're not leaning back too much on those, on that character's experience of themselves, I guess, right? It's the same kind of thing where, like, when you're writing a third person limited still stuff, like he saw this, you don't really need that because we know whose head we're in. And so if you describe a thing, only that person could have seen it. Therefore, you don't actually need to say he saw, right? There are times to use it to just sort of like create the space a little differently or create the right rhythm in the sentence. But in general, that sort of he saw, he heard, he smelled, like you don't need these things because it's inherent. And so similarly, like you don't have to establish the viewpoint character as much in a first person narrative because it's a given. And so you can watch for that sort of I me my problem and pull a lot of that out because they are the entirety of the camera, right? Like you don't necessarily need all of those. And when you don't, when you can take them out, it doesn't feel like you're talking to someone who's obsessed with themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, that was a lot.
No, that was
No,
good.
man,
That was
it's
good.
completely valid. Yeah.
We're up to 99 tangerinos. 99
I love that.
Yeah.
I hope that
It's
we get 100 on this and we
that'd
can
be
call
good.
out that person specifically.
I'm preemptively declaring victory because I said I
Oh
would
yeah,
get the
no.
people and the people came. So
I'm
yeah,
not
right.
buying it. I'm not buying it until it hits 100. I'm not buying it until it hits 100. The Amazon shall see no money from me until then. All right, let's hop into the emails that we got. Again, thank you to all of the extremely patient tangerinos that have written in over the last few months. We'll get into these. Hello, most tan tan tantric. I think this is supposed to
Okay,
be
well that this is we're setting up this fucking Minotaur milking book. Yeah.
Tangentric. There we go. I have binged your podcast for the last 2 months, and I'm just about caught up with the episodes in the 90s. Oh God, if we were doing episodes in the 90s, good Lord. Love your
When you were
advice
but a
and
lad.
Yuck.
love your advice and the overall vibe of your podcast. I feel that I have made huge strides in my writing from all of the wisdom you have divulged and even tangentially shared. I just self-published my first book in a series. Hey, congrats!
Hey, congratulations.
Which brings me to my question. My plan for my series is for each book to stand alone without a direct connection to the previous book. Some characters will appear in other books, but they will be reintroduced accordingly, but will all take place in the same world and timeline. I know you have talked about series in the past, so my question is, if the books don't carry through a specific arc, should I have an ending in the series overall? Any advice or direction is welcomed and appreciated. Thank you for your amazing and entertaining podcast. Your loyal listener, Stratos.
Okay, not to. I know I jumped on the last one, but this one I have a lot of opinions about because
Yeah, go for it.
yeah, serialized content is kind of my thing. So here's the number one thing you got to be aware of. If your story is about something happening specifically, the comet's got to come, war's got to break out, we've got to cure the plague, we've got to depose the king, we've got to reinstall the king. If there is a goal, that goal has to happen, and that is probably the end of the story. You can do more stories, but it has to happen. It's like something like Battlestar Galactica. They're looking for Earth. At some point, you have to find Earth, or people are going to stop caring and feel teased. Like Berserk went 30 years and didn't have an ending. Where
Currently reading
versus,
that.
stop, it doesn't end. Spoiler alert, you're never gonna find out what happens because no one does. That's not completely true. The guy died and they kind of bolted on an ending, but I'm like, it took you 30 years. I don't care. Just the Bible didn't take 30 years to find an ending. Whereas if you frame it where it's something like the Marvel Universe, then that's a sandbox where infinite stories can take place. You know, you can tell 70 years of Superman stories and nobody's upset with you. And yes, Superman's DC, not Marvel. You know what I'm saying. You can tell 70 years of Superman stories and nobody's mad at you because over those 70 years, it's been 10,000 Superman stories versus he's been looking for Krypton this entire time. You know, then that doesn't work. I mean, there's Star Trek novels go on and on and on. I mean, sometimes you get an individual series, you'll get an arc. I mean, I definitely think it's worth like you didn't mention the genre, so I'll stick with Star Trek. If you're like, this is Star Trek Titan, the Kingbreaker novel series, and it's going to be like three novels, and then you'll have Star Trek Titan, you know, the Dawn Looker arc, you know, where you're doing the next thing. So yeah, the real key is whether or not there is a specific overarching plot, or is the situation the backdrop against which other things happen.
I agree.
I will say what popped into my head with this question initially was Discworld. Like there's a bunch of books in there that don't necessarily connect to each other, but they're all in the same world and everything like that. There are plenty of arcs and trilogies within them, but there's like Dr. B a long time ago sent me this chart of like how to read or how you might want to read Discworld, and it was fascinating seeing like this book takes place between this one, but you don't necessarily need to read this one to do this one, and then this connects to this one. It was really, really cool. So it is it can be done. But as far as like an ending goes, I if it is just these, if it's just stories that have a beginning, middle, and end, and they happen to be in the same world, and there isn't like a, you know, big thing happening in the background that's world-threatening or anything like that, I don't think you do. Like, as long as those are satisfying stories within their books and whatnot, I don't think the quote unquote series needs an ending. Unless you're just, you know, it's like, oh, well, I've told all the stories that could exist in this world. The world
I don't think that's
No, I don't
necessary, but
either.
if your heart wants it, no,
You
I agree
know?
with you guys. If there's a goal you're aiming for, you gotta hit the goal.
I mean, if you're
And
getting to the point,
if
you've
it's a
written enough
world.
of them, and you're worried that after you die, there's like, I don't want anybody to pick up these books and just keep writing for me. Blow up the
Yeah. You're like, rocks fall, everybody dies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I gotta tell you, while we've been talking, Exceptional Potato became the 100th
Exceptional
Tangerino.
potato.
All
They may
right.
have introduced themselves with their actual name, I don't know.
Well,
Yes, Greg, welcome, Greg. You are the
welcome.
100th
You are
Tangerino.
welcome, Greg. You are the
You and
100th
so
Tangerino. Whatever happens from here is your fault.
this is also how I
Yeah.
discovered that I'm gonna have to buy a physical copy of this book.
I was just thinking that I
Because
might do that.
I don't have a Kindle, I have a Nook,
Here's
and it doesn't seem to be available as an ebook on the Nook. So.
why I can't buy a hard copy of that book. Because there's no version of events where I can let the kids find that book.
That is a problem I am
Yeah.
considering currently, but I will figure it out. Because the other option is an audiobook, and I believe I mentioned previously, I'm not keen on smut as an audiobook. It feels
No,
intrusive,
no.
very
Yeah.
uncomfortable.
No, I'm buying on Kindle. I'm doing it right now. Buy with one click. I have purchased the book. I didn't even have to do this, folks. I have Kindle
Yeah,
Unlimited.
you
I
did.
could have just rented it, but I'm
No.
all in. There we go.
This is not available for pickup at the store.
Here's the thing.
Judgmental.
Here's the thing. I would walk in and maintain eye contact to establish dominance to be like,
For real.
yes,
Just like, did
I've
you have any
purchased this.
questions?
Yes, for my own edification.
Oh boy. All right, well, look forward to that, Tangerinos. And while you do that, let's answer another question. I guess we actually have to figure out how we're doing this book club.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we need to decide because we haven't. Yep.
Greetings, warriors of the Tangentine. There we go. Tangentine. I have a question about how to handle feedback. A little background. I have recently entered a novel excerpt contest. As my novel is barely in its first revision, I had no expectation of winning, but I was drawn to the prospect of getting feedback from three editors. The feedback was great, but it was clear that two of the three editors didn't seem to understand the bigger picture. They came back with basic questions of who, what, where, all of which are answered outside of the excerpt word limit zone. However, the third editor understood completely, and it seemed to be a big hit with her, so much so she's willing to set up a virtual meeting with me outside of the contest. My question is, if someone is putting their work out there and getting wildly different feedback, how do you weed out what's priority, there we go, to focus on? I can say things. Until Valhalla, dang, that's a sign off. Matthew.
I want to sign all my emails off until Valhalla now. That's pretty badass. All right. Agreed. So you're getting feedback. Some of it is that it's sort of wildly different. So I think we've said before, I can hear B-Dave's voice in my head saying this, so I know we've said it before. Mm-hmm. When you start to get feedback that is just kind of all over the place, you're very close. Mm-hmm. So ideally, if you're getting feedback and it's all different, these are people you can dig down with. And it doesn't sound like in this case it is, but just for, you know, everybody out there, because frequently when you get feedback, there's like something is triggering it. And depending on who you're getting it from, they might be kind of misunderstanding the trigger, right? I don't understand what this like, I don't understand this thing. And you're like, it's right there, right? I'm missing this information. And you're like, it's right there. The actual problem there is this information is not placed in such a way that it is being grabbed by the reader. It's easy to miss, right? It does not feel important enough. It isn't that it's not there, which is what the people are telling you. It's that you haven't framed this in a way that says, this is important, pick it up. You know, oh, I don't like this character. Well, that's not really here or there. What's the problem, right? Oh, the problem is that, you know, I've sort of missed the place where I've been signaled I need to emotionally come along with this because this moment didn't actually develop any connection for me. Or it's possible you're getting feedback that's junk feedback. I can't connect with this character. He reminds me of my ex-boyfriend.
Oh, God.
Okay. That's not my problem. That sounds like you and your therapist's problem. And that's fine. There are definitely books where I'm like, I can't read this because this reminds me of something that's very unpleasant or this, you know, that's fine. Right. There's huge swaths of people for whom Lolita is deeply triggering, and it is still a masterpiece of literature. It can be both things, right? I don't like this is not actual feedback, but something underneath it might be. So if you're getting feedback and it seems like you're getting weird outliers, digging down is the first answer. The second thing is thinking about what is this person, because, okay, when people give you feedback, they are always trying to help you get to a goal state. And that goal state might not be what you want, right? Here are the things you can do to make your book, you know, the easiest commercial sell. It will mean stripping out all of your artistic vision, which is what makes this appealing to you. Is that worth doing? Depending on who you are, yes or no. You know, these are the things you can do to jump on this trend. Do you want to write a romantasy that's in the vein of ACOTAR? Maybe, maybe not. These are, you know, kind of questioning what the motive is here is another thing, because everybody who's giving you feedback has a motivation in there, even if it's they're not necessarily being explicit about it. And I don't mean that in a way that's like everybody's trying to manipulate you. I just mean it like everybody else has got their own vision that they're trying to like set to the side or not, and you're gonna have to work around that. And then there's this last thing. When describing this, it sounds like maybe some of these editors did not kind of come in with the assumption that you knew a lot of this stuff. Because you gave them an excerpt that didn't kind of have all of the details, they're like, ah, problem might be those details don't exist. And so they're giving you feedback for something that you've moved past, which is actually generally a problem that I feel like comes up when you give people a partial. Because there is, and some people just in general with a partial, like, I don't want to knock these editors. But I have definitely had the experience of someone that I do not already have a trusted relationship with reading a partial and is taking basically a lot of it not on good faith and coming in with the assumption that they need to teach me the basics. And so this is another thing is like, there's another motive in here. Is someone coming in and thinking they need to teach you? Is someone coming in and wanting to show you what they know? Those are not the same thing as helping you get your book to its best self. So sorry, that's a lot of talking, but those are my feelings.
Plus one, all of that. It's to give you a different example, if you know anybody who's a real estate agent, when they are showing houses, when people bring friends or family who aren't going to live in that house, real estate agents hate that because every single time the friend or the family member feels like it's their job to point out the flaws. It's their job to point out everywhere they can, they can see the they can see the strings, you know. There's some editors that are like that, especially when they're reading. They're not necessarily professional editors, when they're just readers. They're like, it's my job to get into the minutiae that that normally I wouldn't care about, and I might not even care about if I weren't giving you this read. So here's all this stuff. And one of the questions you got to ask yourself, unfortunately, is, does their opinion matter? You know, Aaron and I have talked about this a lot. I hate having editors when I don't respect their opinion. And sometimes you got to suck it up, especially if they're paying you money. But other times, and if you do that, by the way, if you do that, always make a copy of the original. This seems like obvious, but not everybody does it. You go back and you start chopping on your original baby, and then you're like, how did I have it before? No, copy this edit. Like, now this was a screenplay, but I had, a military screenplay that was about a guy who had come back from Afghanistan and had PTSD and was kind of picking his life back up. And that was what the story was about. And then we got these investors from Turkey, and they were like, no mention of the Middle East, no mention of PTSD, because that we don't believe in that, but still tell the same story. So I'm like, okay, so Batman with no dead parents. Got it. Right. Okay. Well, that's now no longer Batman, you know? But I just had to make a copy and kind of Frankenstein it. And also remember, art is subjective, and this is always the tough thing. It is hard to know when to stand your ground, because I've seen both. You see the stories where you're like, I was rejected 50 times, and now that book's the biggest thing in the world. I've also seen people stand their ground on stuff that was objectively trash. So And you got to know in your heart of hearts. But to circle back to the thing that Aaron said first, which is the thing that I always say before. Look at that. We have fused into the hive mind.
Fusion.
Fused. Hey, we actually did it. I wish.
Oh my gosh, you did.
I wish we had the camera for that. We actually did the
Okay.
Dragon Ball
I
fusion.
you know what? If you remind me, I have the video recording. I can grab that.
It actually worked. I didn't even know you knew
You're
what the
you
Dragon
two
Ball
are
Fusion
even wiped.
I've
I'm
seen you do
so
it. I've
proud.
seen people do it. I will be honest, I didn't know it was a Dragon Ball thing, but I
Full
knew
credit.
to do it.
Full credit.
Full
Yeah, I'm
credit,
so proud of you
absolutely.
right now.
That one was for Toriyami.
but All I wanted to say is do look for patterns, though. You know, even if your feedback's all over the map, but it's always like, I really don't like your main character. I really don't understand where they are. I get lost in what the story is. You know what I mean? Like, those are kind of the nuggets that you can sort of sift out and repair. And as we've shared many times, if you really want to feel better about yourself, go and read the 1-star review of like great works of art. You know, go read the 1-star reviews of Jane Austen. You know, yeah.
Find the book you read that makes you want to chop your hands off and throw them in a box and never write again. Somebody hates that book. Somebody hates that book and wrote a very detailed Goodreads review as to why.
Yep. The person's also probably a jilted writer, but yes.
Love it. All right. Let's go on to the next one.
Hey, Trevor, yeah, you did, any thoughts on that? I
Oh
wonder if
no,
it was
there's
carried about.
literally nothing I could add that is could be, it would just be me reiterating what the two of you said because that was a fantastic way to put it. Let's see. Is this right? Yes. Because until Valhalla, yes, Matthew. Thank you. I love that. I want to sign off all of my work emails with that
Yeah,
now.
no, that's that was a quote. Yeah.
Before my question, I must say I love your podcast. It has more to say about actual story construction than just about any writing podcast to which I've ever listened. I'm blushing as I say this is usually why I don't read this stuff out because it makes me feel weird. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the good work you do. I have written 5 NaNoWriMo novels
Hey.
and 2 off season. All of them are bad, and that's okay. I like that.
That is okay.
I've decided to take the time and build a proper, fully fleshed outline and spend time writing a good book. It's that process that I'm currently working through. I must say, just spending the time to outline and brainstorm and work out problems in advance of actually writing has been very rewarding, and it already seems like it's going to be a better story than anything that I've written for NaNoWriMo. However, my protagonist has left for an adventure and he has to deal with all kinds of problems along the way. But there is no specific villain. I've tried to write a big bad and work him into the plot so that he's the cause of these things that happen to my hero, but it feels very forced. I know that good villains make good heroes, but I feel that if I write a crappy villain just to have a villain, then I will have a crappy hero. Well, I like that. My question is this: is it okay that the world is the antagonist? My hero has to battle the elements, savage cannibals, waterfalls, and a dinosaur that somehow survived into the 21st century. That's incredible.
So a bird?
He's not a Navy SEAL or a professional treasure hunter. He's a projectionist at an art house cinema, and all of that is a pretty big challenge. I will come through. He will come through a changed person. Without a big bad in his, is he destined to be a weak hero, Charles?
You want to start?
Yeah. I just because I'm biased, I don't like man versus nature and man versus environment stories. They're just not my jam. I don't like stories where ultimately it's like just live through this, because that's usually what those stories are. I would submit though that what you just described is not innately a story with no villain, you know. You give that dragon or the dinosaur a specific scar, you know, and have it come back more than once. You know, I mean, the world can be your adversary. I've done the opposite. I've told stories, like especially in some of the streaming work with the World of Darkness, where the story was about New York. And because of that, the characters could kind of change because it actually was the city we were talking about. And it also doesn't mean I would say you can get away without a primary villain. You cannot get away without a primary conflict, you know? Because I would submit that Jurassic Park didn't have a primary villain. I mean, well, because there's multiple raptors. They don't really specify any of them being special in the first one. And even you think the Tyrannosaur is the villain, but it actually saves you. I mean, really, John Hammond is the villain, but I don't know that we're ready to have that conversation.
I feel like that is way clearer in the book. The movie, he's like this nice old man who just did. Oh no, what
I spared
happened?
no expense. What?
Right.
Yeah,
Well,
he
that
is.
book scared. Oh,
Yeah, man.
sorry, I have a tangent about that book, but let's
Well,
finish this question.
spoiler alert, the compies eat his face in the book.
Oh.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
he does not come out of that book.
Yeah.
It's a ignominious death, really.
So, I think my first point would be, again, even if you have faceless hordes, just put a face on one of them. The special orc, the special gorilla, you know what I mean? That when even though it's written, it's like, oh, wait a minute, that one's bigger and has red eyes. You know what I mean? Like you've already raised the stakes a little bit. Second to that, it is possible to have, oncoming hordes as the foes, like the Daleks. I mean, the Daleks are supreme. But with very rare exception, the Daleks aren't individuals. It's like the Daleks as a monolith are a problem. But I mean, doing a kind of H.G. Wells journey to the center of the earth, sort of just like we're just running through chaos to get to a place to do a thing. Yeah, you could do that. It's kind of retro, but you could certainly do it.
And I'm having a hard time thinking, because I feel like there have been a couple of times where I've gotten well into a book and then gone, wait, this is basically, man versus nature. But I think that for that to be successful in modern literature, what you want to do is definitely carve a character arc. Like, by doing this, I must confront this thing within myself and change. And that way, I will manage my way out of this. That sort of episodic, we fight the cannibals, we fight the giant bird, we fight the, I can't remember the rest of the Sinbad voyages. Anyway, that sort of thing is something you see more of, where it's less about the character and more about the sort of settings and the action. And I think that what people are sort of more drawn to is like a character story these days. So I would say, like, if your character arc is strong enough to sort of sustain it, and those things sort of build along it, then you can do this, and you don't need a villain. But I think that's another thing. It's like, if they are separate and they do not speak to each other, those encounters are probably more episodic than you want. If the goal is we are going to get to the lost city of the volcano and find the idol, but we can't do that until we learn to work as a team together, then fine, right? This is, a little bit man versus nature, and a little bit like, man versus himself kind of thing. And that, I think, ends up being more workable, right? You have to get through the forest, and the forest turns out to be sentient and trying to kill us. You have a villain. It's the forest. But yeah, but you need to sort of kind of make a through line for it, so it's not just like random encounter table the novel.
I mean, I almost made it through an entire episode not mentioning theme, but because I think, understanding what your story is about will help inform the obstacles. I mean, the road, even though, again, I maintain that book is unreadable, it's essentially man versus environment, though, because it's like they're just trying to live. I mean, they keep kind of running into cannibals and assorted just like terrible things. But I mean, they're just trying to make it. Like, we've just got to get to the coast, and the enemy is what the world's become. That's your actual foe, and it's a foe that cannot be beaten. You definitely can frame a narrative that way. But all things being equal, to Aaron's point, and I do agree with this, in modern storytelling, you'll probably get more yards out of this if, like, there's somebody that doesn't want them to do the thing. Someone you can put a face on.
Yeah. I don't have much out of this other than I like those stories.
You like
me? I do enjoy those kind of stories a lot. I think that they are fun, and I do kind of enjoy that moment of like reading a book and being like, oh wait, you know, there's not like a not bad dude, not like a person that is whose fault is this. I think that can be fun. I don't know how your projectionist is going to encounter a dinosaur that somehow survived into the 21st century.
They're called birds. They identify as birds.
I mean,
Trevor,
even if you want to, like, you know, quibble about that, look up a cassowary.
Yep. Oh, those things are terrifying.
That's just a dinosaur. It's just a dinosaur with better PR.
Yeah,
and listen to the sounds cassowaries make.
I haven't done that.
They sound like you think they sound. They're it's, yeah, they're full of rage and hatred. Yes. Oh, yeah, I just, okay, yeah. Now you look up the cassowary.
That's
noise.
What
it's
I'm
fine.
Doing.
You can Google
I'm not
it
adding
friend,
the sound into
we're...
the podcast.
I mean, maybe
you
should.
Phones.
I don't know.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Well,
here, I'm gonna rant a little more about this answer.
Yeah,
while
you,
Trevor's
you go,
looking
go
up
and do that.
On the cassowary noise. Yeah, because I'm thinking about other, man versus. Oh, there it is. I wish you could see his face. Wait, yep.
You have to make this in a video because that face was very expressive.
It's like that, like the scientists think they figured out what a T-Rex sounds like. It's fucking that.
Well, literally.
It's fucking that.
Literally.
You're like, there's the argument.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go, friends. Google cassowary noises if we don't include it in here. Yeah. And I mean, imagine something making that noise that really does want to kill you.
Yeah. No.
Like kiwis make fucked up noises too, but they're just trying to scare you because they're going to run away because they're just little meatballs. Although kiwis are bigger than you think, actually. They're weird big. Yeah. Yeah. They're like the size of babies.
Have you ever looked at the like body size of a kiwi compared to the size of its egg? This is upsetting.
I'd make that noise too if I had to lay an egg like that. Jesus. Yeah, right. But the cassowary means it. That's all the only point I was making. The cassowary is serious.
That's fair. You know, if you're starting to doubt the dinosaur, put a fucking cassowary in that Cinemaplex.
Yeah. read your H.G. Wells, kids.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more question. Hello to the Fey rulers of the Tangent Realms. I like that one a lot. Saw the following, they included a post below, but it was from author P.N. Elrod of I Strahd fame, among others. Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking
about the topic of how important is that opening line. I think you guys have touched on it before. I think it was literally like our episode zero, but since then it's been over 100 episodes now. Huge congrats on that, by the way. Thought it might be interesting to hear your varied opinions. Keep up the great work. Mayor the Merchant. The excerpt below, I did read it earlier. It essentially was Elrod,
P.N. Elrod is a woman. I don't know her pronouns at this
that's
point.
Fair. I'll go with that for right now. But what they essentially said was three times in their life, they have stopped reading a book because the first sentence involved someone waking up and then putting their feet out of the bed and their feet touching a corpse. And they've stopped reading three times. And like, that's one of those, if I had a nickel for every time, sure, I'd only have three nickels, but it's weird that I have any nickels at all.
A statistically anomalous amount of nickels.
Yeah. So like, you know, that's their like, I'm not continuing on from where you're going.
Had Elrod said that or Doug said that? Oh, sorry,
Elrod.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. So, I've never read that happening.
Yeah.
I'm also very concerned about what's going on with these characters.
Well, and what they essentially got into is the fact that it's like, it wasn't specifically the corpse. It was the cliche of first sentence be the person waking up. They said that they had tried to sell a novel several times where it started with someone waking up and it finally sold when they got rid of that. And it started with a car crash instead.
Hmm.
So first sentences.
I have read multiple books that make the argument that it is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually agree with that. It almost certainly won't be your best line. It might, but you usually sort of build to a crescendo when your best line's going to hit, usually. But it's, to use a fishing analogy, it's when you set the hook. I mean, if you don't, I mean, we joke about it was a dark and stormy night, but we joke about it because that line was a banger so much that like everybody started doing it and it became a cliche, It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, I'm always going to say this wrong because I'm not supposed to be able to pronounce Latin because I'm from Arkansas, but I like to all start in medias res. Like, I'll start with something like, she never saw the fist coming. You know what I mean? Like, it's never a setup. Never start with them going to breakfast. I will tell you, especially in a screenwriting world, opening with a breakfast scene is the biggest cliche that you are a new writer and people immediately don't take you seriously.
Interesting.
Yep. Never start
I
with
kind
breakfast.
of get it, but
Yeah.
I could not explain why.
Well, it's because all things being equal, it doesn't actually matters, and it's a very cliche way to set the scene that you're like, before we go through the looking glass, they're gonna run by and here's this breakfast banquet, and they're gonna grab a piece of toast and go out to the bus. It's just like, nope, wrong. Backspace, so that's the way I like to do it. I like to start with something that is going to make the reader want to know more, to have some sort of question, that says like, he knew the car had an airbag. He didn't expect it to break his jaw. I mean, you're immediately gonna be like, what? So that's just how I mean, and again, it doesn't even necessarily have to be action. It could just be something like, she rolled over and looked at him lying there sleeping peacefully, and she felt hatred swell up in her heart.
So what?
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
I like that. That was a good
Yeah,
one.
you know what I mean? Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I Not,
mean,
yeah, I'm sorry.
no, it's okay. I think that's critical, right? Like, ideally, what you have in that first sentence is that there's a little question that kind of springs out of it. And it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be a thing where you're like, the fuck? Like, what is happening? I need to read the next sentence. But there has to be some part of that that pulls you into the next thing. I think a lot of that, starting when you're waking up, starting when you're having breakfast, is kind of like throat clearing. Like you're sort of like working your way toward the thing that's like actually something is happening and it's actually going to tell you something. So you don't need that stuff, right? Like B-Dave said, like having breakfast probably isn't important. And so then why are we doing that? So like that doesn't necessarily mean like not every story is meant to start like right at the like at the blanking on the word.
Inciting incident.
Thank you. My brain kept going, it's status quo. I'm like, that's it, brain, shut up.
Literally the opposite.
Right?
Literally
I'm
the
like, no.
opposite.
I hate that when like I'm like, this is the answer. And it's like, it's not the answer. And that keeps coming up until I say
It's
it.
like
So
Janet just
go.
pulling out cactuses.
It's
That's
Janet
for all.
pulling out the cactuses forever.
That's all you good place
Yes.
people out there.
So the like sometimes I've seen people complain that it's like, oh, this book starts so slow, right? But there is some like setting up that needs to happen. There is some immersion that you need to build, and that's okay. But the immersion still needs to like tell us about the character, tell us about the world, tell us about the building conflicts, right? If you are just doing like kind of cozy slice of life scenes, and you want me to be super engaged in your high stakes fantasy, you didn't give me anything to engage in. I can read this. I don't know if it's, I'll be honest. So B-Dave asked if I can read the first line of Relics of Ruin.
Yeah, it's, let me set this up. Let me hype man for you. It just so happens Erin M. Evans has a copy of her book that is going to be available in stores April 30th, Relics of Ruin. And I asked here in our chat, I was like, can you read the first line? Or is it gonna like, violate an NDA? Because I didn't want to just like put you on blast here where people could actually hear you. But since you said you think you can,
Oh, I can
blast, blast,
totally read
blast,
it.
blast by the
No
book, by the book,
problem.
by the book. Yeah.
Also, part of me is like, I'm too far in this to care about NDAs, but there's no NDA here.
Yeah, what are they gonna
So
do now?
part,
Not publish it next month?
right,
Yeah, right.
exactly, right. What are they gonna do? No, I think they'd actually love that. I will say this. I think my best. I think the. I kind of think the first line of the RuneScape book is maybe better. And I will also say, I don't think I've ever written a first line that it's as good as the first line of Brimstone Angels, which infuriates me to no end. But this one's, I don't think, too bad. 2 weeks from the Salt Wall, Rodolfo Carazzi, once Duke of Simila, stops to consider a crumbling map. I actually think the first paragraph is better because it's that kind of unit, but it is this, right? And it is a sequel. So you know already who Rodolfo Carazzi is, and you're like, what the shit? He got pretty far. Where's he going? This sort of thing. But also because of the tense shift. But this is the I actually like this one. This is probably, I want to say it's my second best. Ilma came to the shore of the Wolf Clan's summer encampment on a cold tide, two lies in her mouth and a gifted green cloak wrapped around her shoulders.
Oh yeah, I like that.
That one's good. Yeah, I
Yep.
have Brimstone Angels out here. We're just gonna go on a tour of all of Aaron's favorite
Yeah.
lines because try and
Well,
stop me, guys.
that's
While you
what
look,
happens when you've read too
I'll
many
here we
novels
go.
or
Oh
written too
yeah,
many novels.
there you
Oh,
go.
there was. Yeah.
Here we go, here we go.
The book that I will find in a shop one day.
Best of luck. Burita met the devil in the dead of winter, 17 years after she'd been left at the gates of a village on no one's map.
That is a good one. That
Like it.
you want, Aaron, you want to know why that's such a good one? I do remember the first time I read that line. And I do
Wow,
remember thinking, that's a
nice.
fucking good line.
Those are good feel. Like, oh,
That was
I
before I knew you.
the first time I read, thank you, Shauna Germain, who we've had on this show, her first book, I still remember the first line. It's so good. It's like, poison doesn't lie, but Talia does. And
Yeah.
I'm just like,
I
what the
bought that
fuck?
book at Barnes and
Yes.
Noble. I went and hung out with my friends and I read that line. I'm like, fuck, everyone stop. You got to hear this line.
So good, right? It's got
Well,
a lovely like poetry to it, and
yeah,
it
yep.
has a question in it, like, what is she lying about? What do you mean poison doesn't lie? I kind of get it, but tell me more.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, it's a good.
Well, and again, it gives you a sense of what you're in for.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, even cliche though it may be, it was a dark and stormy night, gives you a sense of what you're in for. You know, you're like, I
Yeah.
have an idea of which way this is headed. You know, it is unlikely that it's going to be a family enjoying a spirited game of Uno. Maybe, but you know,
I mean, it might. It
I
just might,
yeah,
you know, as if it's in Ireland and then the devil shows up, you know,
right, yeah,
it'll,
as what well as is wont to happen during spirited games of Uno.
Yeah. The thing that I will add to this is that yes, the first sentence is important, but do not stress out about it having to be the best damn sentence you've ever written in your entire life. Sometimes it can just be, you know, it's a good sentence, and that's all that
Yeah.
matters.
And
It doesn't have to be the best. It just has to be good. And I guarantee you, in all the sentences you wrote in your book, there's a lot of good ones in there. So it's not that high of a task for you to write another good one that starts it off.
you can always come back and rewrite it later,
Absolutely.
especially once the book is
Never,
done. Yeah.
never worry about that when you start writing that first chapter. You just start writing. You don't even think about that fucking sentence ever again. You write that first. You just mash your hands on a keyboard. I almost just sent a message to my work chat that was gobbledygook. And just and that's it. That's the first sentence until you come back and you change it.
Good
But yeah.
plans.
Any other thoughts on first sentences?
No, I think that covers it.
All right. Well, I think that's where we're gonna wrap things up, and we got to figure out how to do a book club now because we're doing a smut book club with Minotaurs, and
Yeah.
the Discord is already happy about it.
Excited.
And I don't, yeah, like I have no idea what the logistics of this are even supposed to be,
I
but
don't know
we'll
either.
figure
We'll
it
figure
out.
it out
Yeah.
though.
Yeah.
Friends.
Get your copy.
friends, where can people find you and awesome things you work on? But you know what? If you do, you go get a copy. Be sure, you know, you just, so if there's comments somewhere, you put in there. You're doing this for the Writing About Dragons and Shit book club.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're people. Like, need some extra cream for my coffee.
Fucking hell.
Ew.
I just prepare your coffee your coffee cups. That's all I have to say.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Aaron M. Evans. You can find me on the Dungeon Crawlers / Writing About Dragons Discord. You can join me on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/ Dungeon Crawlers for concentration check, a co-writing space. Come get some Pomodoro sprints done with me and a guest. You guys, I hope you all showed up for B-Dave today. It was a delight. I think next is Eric's got to be. So we're going to go through some guests, and then we'll see if this is what we keep doing. And if I can learn the tech.
Without taunting the tech. It was Trevor last week. So you watched the VOD.
Oh no, it was Shauna Germain last week.
Shauna was last week. That. Trevor was the week before. Yes.
Yeah.
Pick up my book, Empire of Exiles, pseudo locked room mystery in an epic fantasy setting, and then you have time to pre-order Relics of Ruin, whose first line you just heard.
Hell yeah.
And also Gift of Goofix, because apparently I just am gonna be putting out all the books this spring. Just plan your reading around me. You can do Minotaur Milking and then Relics of Ruin and then Gift of Goofix.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to get a Gith of Goofix while we're reading the Minotaur Milking.
And then try to figure out how that fits into a trilogy.
Goodness gracious. Thanks and mercy.
I just want to say before you do yours, I checked the Twitter comments of that post you put out. My favorite one is from Donovan, who says, "Move over, Oprah. Here's B-Dave."
I hadn't seen that.
That's good shit.
Perfect.
Yep.
Oh, it is I.
Yeah, it's
Walters. Here's the thing that especially if you're not, you know, if you haven't been on this journey with us, the Minotaur milking thing began as like, not king shaming, but king questioning. Like, why, why? And as it continued to come up as a punchline, it was like, we should have goal that if we hit said goal, we will read this book. And it was like, build up the Discord, because the Discord's a big deal. So I am nothing if not for sale. Really, that's what I wanted you to know, that at the end.
That's the sequel to the Minotaur Milking
just
book.
everything has its price. Yeah. I don't know what it will take for us to read the books about fucking pillows. B-Dave Walters everywhere. There you go. Yeah. And you should follow along, because I'm about to be traumatized by fantasy smut.
Yeah. You can find me on all the dystopian social medias at the Trevor. There's an A hiding in there, but more importantly, on the Dungeon Scrawlers Discord. There is a link in the description below where you can come hang out and talk with some really awesome people, and you know, talk about Minotaur smut books.
We're gonna have to make a channel for the book club.
We gotta
quarantine that one. Yeah.
And just a tiny reminder, the way the Discord is structured, because it is sort of shared between our actual play channel and this podcast, go up to the roles and tags channel and click on the things you want, the reacts for the things you want to see. So if you want to see Writing About Dragons and Shit channels, mark yourself as a Tangerino. If you want to see Dungeon Scrawlers actual play content, mark yourself as a Scrawler. Con artists, you are a little in limbo. The stream chat is under the Dungeon Scrawlers section right now, but you can still show your con artist pride by clicking that you watch concentration check.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, the best way to support it is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and tell your friends about the show. If you have any questions like the lovely people who wrote in today, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com. And if you would like to keep up to date on the show, you can join us on the Discord. Just the link is in the description below. But until next week, go write about some dragons and shit.
Move over, Oprah.